and welcome to another installment of Traffica Europe Radio Theatre, featuring European theatrical works translated into English and adapted for radio. I'm Andrew Singer, director of Traffica Europe, and in this installment, we'll hear Decomposed Theatre by Romanian playwright Matei Vișniac, in English translation by Josefina Comforali. So, just sit back, relax, and enjoy this trilogy of short pieces adapted from Matei Vișniac's modular play, Decomposed Theatre. Afterward, I'll be back to speak with the playwright and the translator of this exciting work.
A Traffica Europe Radio, RCI New York, University of the Arts London, research at Camberwell, Chelsea, Wimbledon Colleges of Arts, production, with support from RCI London. Decomposed Theatre by Matei Vișniac, translation by Josefina Comporali.
Quiet Madness.
Good evening. Butterflies have overrun our town. Gigantic, magnificent, flesh-eating butterflies. We've never seen so many butterflies here before. They're absolutely everywhere. On the streets, rooftops, cars, and trees. Anyone who happened to get caught on the streets when they first swarmed in was devoured. From my window, I can see the skeletons of three humans and a dog, their bones picked squeaky clean. The butterflies go for your eyelashes first, then your eyebrows, eyelids, lips, vocal cords, and taste buds. It's the most vividly colourful ones who get the first pick at this. The others, then, have what's left.
Thank you. The whole town is paralysed at present. All the townsfolk have barricaded themselves in their homes, peering through windows covered in butterflies, at the streets covered in butterflies. It looks as if these insects have come to stay for good. What's more, they continue flying in. The layer of butterflies is getting thicker and thicker by the minute, looking more like a blanket of multicolored snow.
Our armed forces are powerless against the butterflies. We simply need to learn to live with them. What we eventually worked out is that the butterflies will only devour living creatures that make sudden movements. If you move extremely slowly, the butterflies won't react. You can even squash them under your shoes and they will simply die. To be honest, you can't even walk down the street without treading all over them. Because their wings are so delicate, almost transparent, the butterflies you crush slowly decompose into a fine powder, their own bodies pulverized in front of our eyes.
Life in our town takes place in complete slow motion. To cross the street, the colonel requires a full half hour. To visit the nearest cafe, which is only at the end of the road, the general needs almost 2 hours. As a result of all this, people show signs of seriously slowed down thinking. We talk to each other at the rate of only one word a day. And our lovemaking is just as slow.
Fevered madness.
Mm-hmm.
Good evening. The flesh-eating butterflies have been driven out of our town by the stink snails. They emerged from every nook and cranny, from the depths of the earth, from canals, cellars, and sewers. They crawl up the walls and over the windows, leaving fine trails of slime behind them. They don't eat anything at all, but the stench they give off is unbearable. People have to move about at a run to avoid throwing up and collapsing in the street.
Hi guys, good morning. The real problem with the stink snails is that they somehow get into people's houses. Like, you wake up in the morning and get out of bed only to find your slippers stuffed with snails. You go to the bathroom, right? To find your sink is overflowing with snails. Ew. You can't see yourself in the mirror because of the hundreds of snails already stuck all over it like gangrene. You go in the kitchen, slice your bread, only to find a stink snail hiding in the loaf. Oh yeah, and you can't even heat up some milk or make yourself an oat milk latte without finding a black snail with green horns already sitting in each pot or pan. And
they're highly mobile.
Mobile too.
On every chair, you'll find a huge great stink snail perched, staring back at you with a guilty look. Like,
it's me.
They slither unbelievably quickly over the furniture, up the curtains, landing on the ceiling, and twirling across at breakneck speed. As soon as you open a book, a tiny flattened snail will plop out. Your old gramophone doesn't work anymore. Snails have made a nest in there. Even your tightly locked drawers swarm with snails. The tiny horns growing, the odd tuft of hair. Ew.
Things were much better when we had the butterflies. We all realize that now. You can't even shake hands with someone because a snail will zip in between your palms in a flash. If you buy a newspaper, you're basically guaranteed that when you reach into your pocket for some cash, you'll encounter a snail or two in there.
Meanwhile, all the stink snails crushed under people's shoes and car wheels have formed a fine layer of slush made from their blood and bits of flesh.
Since everyone has to run all the time, we can't say much to each other. Those who do dare to stop to exchange a couple of words risk immediate nausea. The butterflies were so clean, says the first person, wrenching. And they were so pretty, replies the other before throwing up.
To live with the stink snails, first of all, you need to learn to be silent. For every word you say, there's a little stink snail that will immediately take its place inside your mouth.
Lucid Madness.
Good evening. The stink snails were driven out by a huge, all-pervading creature whose body is shaped like an odorless and colorless rain that never stops falling on our town. We soon realized that the rain wasn't real rain because it didn't leave any drops or puddles. The nation...
The rain creature soaked everything inside. Now it has seeped into the very fabric of the town. The stone of the walls, the glass of the
The rain creature feeds on the substance of things. Slowly and imperceptibly, it empties out anything that has a heart, a soul, a thought. Now you only see dead bodies lying around the streets. There's no point in buying apples. They'll only be hollow on the inside. Loaves have no crumbs anymore. Hens lay transparent eggs. The trees are just inflated trunks. Pick up a stone and you'll find that it's strangely light. Fish with skin covering just some elongated air bubble bob on the surface of our rivers. Each time a dog tries to bark, you'll hear it wheezing instead, and you might even see it collapse to the ground like a fragile house of cards.
The rain creature seeps in deeper and deeper. There is no shelter against the rain creature. We've tried everything. Metal umbrellas, armored capes, reinforced underground bunkers, resistance, and silence. Lately, the rain creature has even had a go at attacking time. Nobody knows anymore whether it's night or day, if you're waking or sleeping, if you're alone or swallowed up by a crowd, if you're touching your own skin or the skin of someone else you're rubbing shoulders with in this vast throng of empty beings. Because the rain creature also lives in the flesh of us humans, in our blood, in our movements and in our dreams, it has the ability to be absolutely everywhere. It's inside each and every thought, inside each and every spoken word. You can do nothing to hide from it. It knows everything. Each moment of the day and night. It monitors all our brains at the same time because it breathes at the same time in all our brains. And it speaks to us as if it were a second voice inside us. The sort of things it says are hardly subtle. Oh, I wouldn't think so. Or, come on, that's taking it too far. Or, it's not a good idea to insist. Or quite bluntly, drop it. That'll never work.
Where are the sting snails of yesteryear? We desperately miss them.
them. To start with, they didn't make any noise at least.
Performed by Maria Forrester. Recording and music by Sam Halmarak. Directed by Kate O'Connor.
Wow. We've just been listening to a Traffica Europe Radio Theater presentation, Decomposed Theater, by Romanian playwright Matei Vișniac, in English translation by Josefina Comparali. I am so pleased now to host in our virtual studios, from London, the translator of this work, Josefina, hello.
Hello.
And speaking to us from Paris, the author, Matei, hello and welcome.
Hello.
Matei, let's start with you. Can you tell us, please, a bit about your background as a playwright and also as a person?
Yes, I was born in Romania many, many times ago. I'm getting old, that's true. I am now 65 and I lived half of my life in Romania and half of my life in France. In fact, I moved to France in 87 as a political refugee, and since I write my plays in French and my novels in Romanian. In fact, I never abandoned my ma langue maternelle, and I lived since 87. I lived between the two countries, between France and Romania. I'm a journalist in France. I wrote a lot of plays, and some of my plays are inspired from my job as a journalist, from my activity as a journalist. And I follow the events in the world, and sometimes I cannot explain everything in my plays. I cannot understand everything as a journalist, but I try in my place to explain more. This is the relation between the journalist who I am and the writer who I am. And I was very lucky in my life to meet some very special people who translated my plays in some other languages, in English, for example. And my meeting with Josefina Comparali was very, very important for me because we had a lot of successful project together.
And Josefina, how about you?
Sure. Well, I have some parallels actually with Matei's experience in the sense that I was also born in Romania and I lived more or less half of my life in Romania and the other half in the UK. I came to study at postgraduate level at the University of Warwick, and that was in 1996. And I came for 1 year and have been here, if we do the math, for 25 years plus. And my initial sort of stay was connected to academia. I did a PhD, and then I became an academic. And then my interest in translation arose from that, actually. And I wanted to translate contemporary European playwrights. And Matei was the very first playwright I've ever translated. In fact, the very first author I've ever translated. And as you just heard, we've indeed been working together over the years, branching out from theatre, in fact, to fiction as well, as I've recently translated one of his novels. And then I moved on to translating the work of other Romanian and Hungarian authors. And I would very much like to continue my career as an academic who translates and as a translator who writes about the authors that they translate and introduce to an English-speaking readership and an audience.
So the work we've just listened to, Decomposed Theater, as adapted for Traffica Europe Radio, is such an artfully constructed audio soundscape. What are the stages in which this came to be? Matei, how did you begin to write such a work?
Well, these short plays, monologue, dialogues, I wrote them in France, in French. When I came and, you know, in 87, I came in France and I started to learn, in a way, the French language. Of course, we Romanians, we learn very quickly English, French. Sometimes it's easier to talk than to write literature in a language. I need some 3 years to be able to write directly in French this place, short place. And in fact, I was interested to write in French. Why? Because writing in French made me or pushed me to change a bit the style, to write a bit different. Why I said that? Because in Romanian, I was, in a way, too rich. I was able to do with the language everything I wanted. But in French, I was a bit poor. And I tried something else. I tried to say a lot of things with very few words. This is a sort of stylistic challenge. And all these short plays are written, I wrote them, thinking that I have to be very, very poor, to use very few words, but to say as many things as possible. And I tried another thing. I wrote 30, 40 short, very short stories, one page or two pages. And I propose, in fact, in this book, these collected short stories, I propose to the director a lot of liberty. I propose him, to every possible director, to choose how many stories he wants, to decide the order of these stories, and to decide with how many actors he wants to work. This is a sort of liberty I propose to the director, and I think a lot of actors and directors were very happy to play, in effect, to assume this liberty. That is the story of this book, this collected short monologue and dialogues, Decomposed Theater. This is the reason I chose as well this title, Decomposed Theater, because it's like a huge story, but a miroir qui a été brisé, a shattered mirror. And I propose to the public and to the director and to the actors to restore the small pieces. This is a game. And I was each time very happy to see how much the actors involved themselves and directors in this game I propose with this collected short plays.
It is a lovely game, and so much of it communicates beyond what could be achieved on the printed page. There's a lot of meta-commentary about the various characters who appear just by their tone of voice and by the way they're portrayed. It becomes a real social commentary about the wider society and all of our roles in it. Josefina, I guess you had already had a working relationship with Matai in previous works. How did you come to translate this particular work? And also, what are any challenges, maybe, that you faced in culture or in language in translating it?
Yes, with this work, we have a long history in particular, because it went through a number of versions within the translation process. So this was translated in a previous incarnation for the edited anthology, and I need to just double check the exact title, How to Explain the History of Communism to Mental Patients and Other Plays, that I edited for Seagull Books back in 2015. So that was at the beginning of my kind of working relationship with Matei. So that was a version that was created for a published situation, for a publication that precisely invited potential readers, potential theater makers to go off and then do whatever they like with the piece, to play this game that Matei is talking about. In this instance, the translation arose from my discussions and working relationship with director Kate O'Connor and performer Maria Forrester. So we've already thought through a variety of approaches to the text and refined the translation for this very specific project that you've heard earlier this afternoon. And in the process, we wanted to address current references, for example, the ongoing pandemic, wanted to make it speakable. So the performability of the text rather than the readability of it was very important. And thirdly, wanted to bring into dialogue other texts by Mate. So in the creative process, I've shared some other translated excerpts from Mate's work with Maria and Kate, such as the play entitled The Man Who Had His Inner Malice Removed, where we are focusing a situation where a news anchor is talking about his experience as a journalist and the kind of cultural references of contemporary media and social media are kind of heavily reflected upon and critiqued by Mate. And that kind of dialogue, that kind of resonance has acted as a sort of filter, as a lens through which this text, this extract from Decomposed Theatre was read. This dialogue was really important in the translation process for me and then the refining of the earlier translation. Now, in terms of specific challenges, there are some very technical ones, such as trying to keep the kind of tense relatively steady, as it were, to kind of slightly reduce the shifts between past and present, which in Romanian are widely acceptable, not so much in English. So we try to keep present and present perfect together and then have moments when we look back into the past. A major focus was surrounding the key focus in each of the three sequences. So, for example, in the first scene, we have the flesh-eating butterflies. That in Romanian is fluture carnivore, and wanted a very visually enticing image that also renders the precision of Mate's style. So went for flesh-eating, for example, rather than carnivorous. In the second sequence, we've got distinct snails for melk pestilential, going for the alliteration. That is very powerful, I felt, in Sting Snails. And the repetition and the recurrence of these terms give a particular energy and dynamism to the text. And then in the third one, the ploaie animal, which literally would mean rain beast or rain animal, ended up rain creature, again, because of the sort of strength and power in this compound. And then the sort of transition and crescendo between the three, I felt, was working really, really well. Also wanted to preserve the poetic strand in Mate's writing more generally. And we should perhaps highlight here that Mate started off as a poet. And I feel that most of his writing is very lyrical, has a very strong poetic sense. So, for example, one of the last or the very last line in the text is translated, "Where are the stink snails of yesteryear?" Bringing in again a kind of universally recognizable poetic resonance for what in Romanian is unde sunt zăpezile de altă dată, which conveys, of course, a sense of regret. And in an earliest version, I think I had, "We desperately missed them," or something like that. But I just felt that this would be much stronger as a finish, especially in the case of this particular extract.
It's funny about that last line you mentioned, "Where are the stink snails of yesteryear?" It's said during the performance in a Slavic accent, so it really evokes for me those older post-Soviet types who, maybe unexpectedly after the change in system, soon become nostalgic for the old Soviet Union. It brings up a wider question, Matai, of how you handle sociopolitical themes generally in your writing. You mentioned earlier that you distinguish writing in French versus writing in Romanian when working in different genres. How does that play out in the context of your writing? This present work has such an absurdist cant to it, obviously. Do you experience a difference, for example, when treating political themes in this way, writing work in French language versus Romanian language?
Yes, I will try to explain some very complicated things with very few sample words. In fact, I started like a poet. I liked so much poetry in my life. I started with poetry because for us in Romania, when I was young, poetry was like a sort of subversive language. Through poetry, we were able to make a sort of criticism of the society. You know, poetry is so special. You can say so many things through the metaphors and so on. I was involved in Romania in such a sort of cultural resistance through the literature, because we had, of course, a censorship, but the censorship wasn't able really to destroy all our works, poems, short novels, short stories, novels, and so on. This was my school, my first school. How to write to be able to surpasser la censure, to get passed through the censorship. And it was a very interesting school because really people needed literature. We used to read a lot in Romania during the communism period, because literature was a sort of liberty space. Of course, we were able, the writers, young writers, to say everything in a directly way, but we had our arms, our instruments, like, for example, the irony or the black humor or the self-irony, derision. It was such a fantastic weapon, not arms, weapon. And little by little, I realized that every artist in such a country like Romania 30 years ago, 35 years ago, 50 years ago, every artist had in fact a mission to try to say no to the unique ideology and to what we called at that moment the brainwashing with only one ideology. And this is the reason that in this short place, Decomposed Theater, I have a character, the brainwasher. The brainwasher. And I wrote three chapters, three stories with this brainwasher who proposed his services, in fact, because every totalitarian system wants to transform people, to transform the men. When I went to France, I was the same. I knew that my mission was to talk about, not about the dictatorship, because in France I was in a free country, but I wanted to talk in my place about what I call the contradictions of human being, because I think that we people, human beings, we are very complicated. We are inside so many contradictions. How we get to live, to talk, to build societies, to build projects with our contradictions, that is a huge subject. Of course, in France, I didn't want to be subversive like in Romania, but to try to understand in a different way this society of consumption, la société de consommation.
How do consumer you call it? Society.
Consumer society. I was really under the shock when I discovered that in this huge consumer society, we are as well manipulated. Of course, not by a dictatorship, not by a unique ideology, but there is a sort of ideology of consuming. I had in front of me a new reality, and I wanted to understand it, to talk about it, and to demolish it, because I thought I had a sort of enemy in front of me. And I had a sort of revelation. It was easier in a way in Romania to talk about the dictatorship and to write place, short place, poetical place, and to laugh, to be ironic with the power. It was easier in Romania to be ironic with the power than in France or in the free world. It was very interesting for me to live between two countries because I was lucky, in fact. In 1989, the communism collapsed in Eastern Europe. I was able to work, to travel again. But all my life, and I wrote some 60, 70 plays, I had this obsession to talk about the human being, about how human being fights for his liberty, how very often the human being is manipulated by very obscure forces. That are my subjects. Of course, very often in my short plays, they are short comedies because I know that laughing is a sort of weapon to obtain more and more liberty, the irony as well, and the poems, the poetry. In all my plays, I have a poetical dimension because I think that poetry is a sort of instrument to understand the mystery of this world. La poésie est un instrument de connaissance. And there's a reason in all my short plays, long plays, I have this poetical dimension and a sort of social dimension, even political dimension. What I hate when I write plays and literature is to be didactic.
Didactic.
Yes, I don't like that because I don't want to send a sort of message in the head, directly in the head of the spectators. What I want is to create an emotion and then to propose to my spectator or to people who are reading my plays, to propose them to think, to debate. That is the reason I'm writing. That is the reason I believe in literature.
And by working in this absurdist mode, it speaks directly to each person, without having to define, or as you say, without having to be didactic about the particular thing that you're communicating or encapsulating. You are rendering it in such a way in your work that each person can apprehend and connect with the feeling and the experience of it, without necessarily being able even to name what it is that's over against them, or which is causing them distress in the work, or which they recognize. And this is a very effective technique, which is really only possible in literary forms. Josefina, do you have any insights into how Matai's works function in Romanian language and culture? And can you add any comment about how bringing it into English language works in terms of this particular vein which we're discussing here?
Yes, I'm aware that this play has been staged in Romanian a number of times over the years, even though I personally have to admit that I've never seen this play produced, just because I've been living in the UK for a very long time. I have seen many other Vișnea plays in Romanian in a variety of theatres, but not this one. But I'm aware of its kind of performance history, if you like. What I would say about it in an English-speaking context is that it has a history indeed. And interestingly enough, though not surprisingly perhaps, this play has stirred a lot of interest over the last year or so. To be precise, ever since the global pandemic, we have encountered remarkable responses and interest from a broad range of theatre makers in this text, who, as you pointed out yourself, Andrew, were taken by the universality of this text and the kind of openness of it and this modular structure of it, the lack of stage directions, the freedom that it offers to directors and performers to mold it in a way in which they feel it resonates with their problems, has indeed opened up new avenues and new interpretations for it. And I felt very privileged to be part of it somehow as the translator into English. So apart from this version by Kate O'Connor and performed by Maria Forrester, just recently a theatre company named Trapdoor in Chicago, who, by the way, have a very long working relationship with Mate, have also taken up the provocation of this text and to date have created a number of responses to it. One was a sort of full-scale online response as part of the International Voices Project back in October, I think, after which they've decomposed and recomposed the play according to a unique dramaturgy that came from a number of international directors who worked on it. And what they've done, they've taken the various scenes and combined them into a variety of permutations. And each episode was a couple or maybe three scenes put together responding to a concern that that particular director and that particular creative team had discovered in those scenes and responded to it in very interesting and imaginative ways, using, of course, the potential offered by online theatre making and digital theatre making, transgressing really and trespassing, you know, geographical boundaries, cultural boundaries and language boundaries, I should add. Because even though the performances were in English, the actors, the performers, the theatre makers, the designers came from a variety of backgrounds. So we have seen there an adaptation also of decomposed theatre in a brand new format, which, you know, reorganised, restructured the sequences and brought in new meanings.
Wonderful. And I can add it's an extra privilege for us to experience this work in its adaptation here for Trafica Europe Radio Theatre, also in the context of other plays from other parts of Europe, which we are presenting in this radio format in this series. Can I ask each of you, what are you working on now? What's next for you, Matai? Maybe you can start.
Well, plays, of course, I have always some two, three plays not finished, which demands my energy. I write in this moment a novel in Romanian. It's almost finished. I have some 400 pages because I used the last year. It was such a special year. I try to use this time. This last year is so incredible. We used to talk, we talked about this invasion, the three invasions. How nice was the time with nails, you know, this replic. If tomorrow atomic war starts, we will say how beautiful was the time of the pandemia. You know, it's such a crazy thing to think that the a worst moment is possible in the history of the humanity. Well, this is the moment, a very special. I would like as well, I'm trying to, you know, every day I write many articles as well for my programs as I work in for French International Radio. I write every week an editorial, an article for an important paper in Romania. The Old Dilemma is the title of this paper, a weekly magazine, in fact. And I would like to write now a sort of essay about what the absurd theaters means, because now we are, for the first time, all the earth, in fact, all the humanity is waiting for Godot. If you want, if somebody never understood the meaning of this play, it is the right moment to read it again or to see it, because we are waiting for something which has to come, perhaps is normality, and we are not sure it will come in the oldest shape. Perhaps something new will come, but waiting for Godot now is a sort of huge, huge, generally global play situation, dramatical situation. I am writing an essay about this waiting mood of the world now.
It puts me in mind of something that Wittgenstein said, that man is capable of infinite torment, and so, too, he can stand in need of infinite help. And perhaps this kind of writing is a grappling forward on that path toward some kind of infinite salvation. Josefina, how about you? What are you working on?
A few things. I've just completed, actually, this, but I would like to mention it, if that's okay. So I've edited an anthology of plays for Bloomsbury entitled Plays from Romania, Dramaturgies of Subversion, which is a selection of texts that aims to reflect a kind of transnational dimension of playwriting in Romania, where in addition to Romanian, texts are being generated in Hungarian, in German, and there's a very strong presence of the Roma community in the theatre world as well. So I put together a selection of six plays that, as I had just submitted to Bloomsbury, and I'm pleased to report that this includes two of Matej's plays. I think his very first play, if I'm not mistaken, The Spectator Sentenced to Death, written back in the 80s, and I was really pleased to discover that it hasn't yet been translated, so quickly snapped it up and included it. And then the already mentioned text, The Man Who Had His Inner Malice Removed, one of his more recent plays about globalization, is also in it. So that's now completed, but we'll work on it, edits and so on. And then I'm working on a translation of Romanian playwright of German ethnicity who, however, writes in Romanian, Eliza Vil, and translated some of her latest play called Disappearing, and would like to continue working on that project and ideally visit Romania and work with the theatre company that produced it in a Hungarian translation. So it would be a really nice way of engaging with the transnational cultural history of that text. So these are my kind of drama-related projects. And then on the side, if you like, I'm working on a couple of works of fiction from the Hungarian, mainly authors who write in Hungarian but stem from Transylvania. So again, there is this transnational dimension in it, and I'm still seeking publishers, but I'm working on extracts of those at the moment.
That's exciting. Both of you, it really sounds like you have a finger on the pulse of some vital social currents. And also that you are both able to apply some cutting-edge creative ideas towards addressing these in literature. Thanks so much to both of you for talking with us today, and thank you for this wonderful performance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Romanian playwright Matej Vișniac and translator Josefina Comparali discussing the work we heard earlier, Decomposed Theatre, adapted and presented here in our Trafica Europe Radio Theater. This has been a Trafica Europe Radio, Romanian Cultural Institute, New York, University of the Arts, London, research at Camberwell, Chelsea, Wimbledon Colleges of Arts production, with additional support from Romanian Cultural Institute in London. Please check out the other performances in this series and all our other great literary content at traficaeurope.org/go/radio. You can also sign up there with your email to stay informed on future shows. On behalf of all of us here at Trafica Europe Radio, I'm Andrew Singer, wishing you a great day.